Hey friend, welcome back to the Freedom Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm your host and business mentor, Lindsay Sutherland. Today, bringing you a super awesome guest that's going to help anybody who's just going through a tough time, because let's face it, we all go through tough times. And that's why this conversation is so important for you to hear. Allow me to introduce you to Kaylin Cotto. She is a fractional CMO, author of The Revenue Runway, and founder of KMC Digital. What else do you do? What else?
Mom, wife, house, yeah, cooker of dinner.
Yep, there it is. That's like the mantra of all of us. Welcome so much to the show. I'm so grateful you're here. Don't miss an episode. Subscribe to this show on whatever podcast player you prefer, and follow me on Facebook and Instagram. Hey, it's Lindsay, and I want to pop in here because I know how overwhelming it can be to get started building an online business. I've even spoken with people who've paid thousands of dollars for help from people who are truly experts in this, and they're still feeling confused about what direction is right for them or if their idea is even a good one. Listen, you don't have to guess or pray or hope or any of that. There is a way to test the market to ensure your idea is a good one so you can launch with confidence. And that's exactly what I show you in this simple 35-minute video training. I keep it simple because I know you already have so much swirling around in your brain. I'm not here to add more confusion because what you need right now is clarity. And that's what's in store for you in the short training called How to Tell If Your Idea Will Be Profitable. Access the video right now by texting the word freedom to 55444. Stop guessing and start taking strategic action. Text freedom to 55444. All right, back to the show.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I always like to start with a guest, just kicking it off. Tell us about yourself. Take your bio deeper than just the labels that we give ourselves. Let's hear you as
Yes.
a
Yep, I grew up in Providence, Rhode Island. My parents had a janitorial services company, so that's kind of where, I grew up sort of with them running a business together. So for me, it wasn't all that strange. I didn't actually go that route in the beginning. I joined the military as a reservist and then went into a corporate office job. So my background's a little bit strange, and I had a phase where I went to college for a few different other things like culinary school and graphic design and all sorts of stuff, just trying to figure out what I like to do. So, yeah, I was born on the East Coast, spent a lot of time on the West Coast, and now I'm in Texas and still working in marketing, helping clients grow, and I really love it. So, yeah.
But I mean, how was your business journey? When did you finally decide, like, okay, I'm done with the corporate world. I'm going rogue.
Yeah, right. No, it was actually funny because I on another, somebody else was asking me this the other day, not on a podcast, but just in a conversation. I said, I think I became an accidental entrepreneur because I was pregnant with my daughter. I want to say I was about 6 months into my pregnancy, and I was working still full time for the Army Reserve. So I was stationed over in like Los Angeles area. So we were pretty busy. I mean, we had a lot of different units in our command, and then we were like had a liaison with like the local community. So there was always something going on. It's just a busy city. And so I just thought, man, I have this BlackBerry that I'm attached to 24/7, and I'm, gonna have this baby soon in a few months. Like, and I had already been kind of helping my coworkers because so where I was in my career was in the military. I went in directly as an officer. So 01, 02, 03, right? I was 03. All the people I worked with were like 05, 06, 07. They were way higher ranking. So they were about to be retiring. I was not. I was sort of, in the middle beginning of my career. So they're leaving, and I was their public affairs officer. So a lot of them said, hey, I want to start my own business, but I don't know how to build a website. I need business cards. You do all that graphic-y stuff for us at work, during the day. Can you help with this on the side? And I would meet with them for coffee on the Saturdays or whatever, and started just doing these little side jobs. And then over time I thought, man, should I register as an LLC or, actually take this more seriously? And it took time to actually have enough income, probably a couple of years. I stayed working both. And then went full time. I always kind of stayed in the reserve side, but I wasn't on active duty for the reserve the whole time. I ended up kind of transitioning out of that and doing client work full time. And then in the journey was, and then I went through my divorce, lost every client. My business was called a totally different name because I went all in on the military niche since I was, and those were my people. So that's who I knew. And I thought, why not just help fellow veterans start businesses and grow them, or even people that want to work with military, they don't know how to get to that group of people. I just had a unique position where I worked that I could help connect those dots for people, which I still do. But I went at all in on Stars and Stripes marketing, and then like later on pivoted so I could expand out past that niche. And so, yeah, I went from losing everything. I think I rebranded twice and rebuilt once. It feels like I rebuilt like two or three times, but I think, yeah.
That is a tough journey. I want to go deeper into that. I don't think people realize, and a lot of them, I mean, that's the thing that kicks them out of being an entrepreneur. You know, when we have to rebuild or we think, oh, I didn't do it, it would just be easier if I had a job. What kept you going? Like, what kept your head in the game? What kept you moving forward?
I think some of it was necessity and some of it was I'm stubborn by nature. I think I had my daughter, she was still too little. Like when I went through my divorce, she was only three. She was in kindergarten, which wasn't a full day, so I was with her and I couldn't just, and even if when they are in school full time, they're home by two, so you can't do a 9 to 5 without paying for childcare. And when she was little, childcare full time was like $1,100 a month in California, and my rent just kept going up. And so we relocated to Arizona just to save money. And I actually went back into the workforce a couple of times. And I think it's when you're in that weird, like I didn't have any support from, financial support from anybody but me. There was no child support. There was no family like, hey, let me help you. I just had to do it. And so when she was in school, I waited tables in the morning. I did client work at night, and that's how I did it. And I just said, eventually this will pay off. Eventually, all this work will turn into something great. And I just knew that because I'd seen other people around me. And they're like, listen, if you just don't give up, you learn a ton and then you'll figure out your systems and then you'll get them in place later.
That's true. That is actually very good. At least you had somebody giving you some encouragement
Yeah.
along the way. Oh,
Yeah.
goodness. Yeah. So what right now, like where when did it finally shift? Like when was there clarity about what you were doing? And it's like, okay, now I feel like I finally am here for what I'm here for.
I think probably during COVID, honestly, it wasn't that long ago because I was, and I, when we were in Arizona, I kind of hit like sort of a rock bottom when it came to like, I need to either get a job again or, and I didn't really have a support system in Arizona. I moved there to save money, but the reasons and the clients and the things I thought I moved there for weren't really permanent. So when I realized like, okay, like this probably was not a smart move. And I was afraid to go back into the workforce as well because I knew like what I did in the military, I could do on the civilian side for a government agency. So I started going on usajobs.gov. If you have never worked for the government, that's where all the jobs are listed for any government positions. Particularly the federal ones. And so I went in, I start applying. I did like 26, 27 applications. I interviewed three times. Anyway, there's this whole story behind that too. But some of these positions like disappeared or went away. And sometimes that means they're hiring someone they know. But anyway, I got this one job offer back home. And it was for the Navy. And I went back to work for 2 years for the US Navy at Naval Station Newport in Rhode Island. And then COVID happened like a year or two into that job. And I could see the writing on the wall. There was a promotion opportunity, but they actually had somebody they pre-wanted in there. So they, I wasn't going to get promoted. So I said, okay, if I don't get promoted and or if I have to take the vaccine, which I know is a controversial thing to say, I wasn't going to take the vaccine, and I knew that up front because my immune system from my deployment was already a mess. And so even the flu shot would make me sick, and I was like afraid that I was going to get sick again. And so I just thought, let's, hopefully, you know, if I do get COVID, it'll be okay. And you don't know, because at the time it was scary. So
Yeah.
I talked to my boss, and I just, you know, I said, I don't know, I'm thinking about, you know, applying for the position that opened above me, and like that, you know, God has a plan. That did not work out. And I thought, okay, I'm not going to get the vaccine, and I'm not going to get promoted like ever. So I'm gonna, because there was only two slots there, and they had to beg to add me to the roster because the person there really needed help. And anyway, long story short, that job opened up for about the 2 years I was in, and they're not even rehiring for that position anymore. But it helped me because I was now near my family. I was able to have my daughter get to know my family better because she grew up in California, and that it was great. It was like a homecoming, and I was there for about 5 years. But after, while this whole thing's happening with the promotion and the COVID and the things, I had people calling me from LA going, "Hey, are you still doing marketing?" Because I never closed the business. I just kind of let it sit there. And I did still have two or three clients, little ones that I was doing side stuff for. But it was only bringing in like 1500 to 2000 a month. Like that's where I guess I feel like I rebuilt twice, because after the divorce, I lost everything. I rebranded, and then again, like, stuff happened to get me to move. That's why I feel like maybe that was divine intervention, because I was very stubborn and didn't want to move home. But out of 20 something jobs, that's the only one that I got. And then after 2 years,
I said
all
something.
the yeah, I'm like, I guess every door out the door shut. So back in LA, you know, this is the truth of the story. Like, my life was just tumultuous. And even now that I'm reconnecting with people from that I used to work with in 2010 and stuff, like, you know, I wouldn't have blamed them for not wanting to work with me back then, because I was, you know what I mean? I was exhausted. I'm trying to get deadlines done. I'm missing deadlines. I'm constantly getting sick. I was getting bronchitis all the time. So I just, and my daughter's like, I'm just trying to hold it together so she can get to kindergarten. So yeah, I think that's why I wrote this book, because mentally it messes with you, and you're like, I'm quitting, I'm getting a job, I'm quitting, I'm getting a job. But I would have missed out on so many. There was Tuesdays where I said, hey, I don't have any deadlines, let's go to the beach all day, and no one's at the beach, and I got to hang out with my daughter. So I just, you know, and while I'm working at home, I'm with her, so I can cook her lunch. I can see what she's doing. She can, you know, we take little breaks. I felt like it was, I just worked life into the business over the years. But when everything went to hell, I thought, that doesn't mean it's over. It just means I have to pivot for right now for financial reasons, and then go back. And I think the thing that people do is they get down on themselves when they have to go back into the workforce, or the business is not growing, because there's a lot of lies being sold about this glamorous entrepreneurship thing. And anyone who's ever taken a crack at it knows within the first 2 years that it's not glamorous at all. And your bank account goes into the red quite often when you're still trying to build up clients, because you're paying for software, you're paying for helpers, you're paying for all these hidden costs that you're like, oh, I didn't really know I should plan for that. And then you end up in trouble, you know. And then when you lose clients that are paying you 12 to 15,000 a month, it's a massive amount of revenue with that, when that contract comes to an end, when you don't have systems, which I didn't. I was completely unprepared. I had clients just not even honor their contracts, and these were very large contracts, and they just didn't pay.
Wow.
And they
Hey,
just,
you're so right about that, like that hidden, and then we get into that mindset of, well, what am I doing wrong? Like, oh,
yeah.
I must be the fail point. Everybody else seems to have it figured out. What's wrong with me? Like, what am I missing here? And
Yep.
I love your story and just how real it is. Also, I liked how you said, you know, sometimes we have to maybe work into the job, but just keep the mindset that this is a temporary thing. Like, I'm doing this so that I can get back on my footing, but I'm not giving up on my ultimate dream. You clearly had what I like to call a North Star. Like you had a vision for what you were going for that gave you that, I don't know, perseverance to stay the course and to keep pushing against whatever was coming your way. And I think that's what really, and just listening to your story, it's like that's the linchpin that kind of held it all together for you. I think if you didn't have that need for your daughter, it would have been really easy to just walk away.
Oh, very much so, because I could have just gotten a job anywhere. I mean, it wouldn't have, for her sake, I wanted to be free, you know, and be able to decide, okay, you know what, today I'm going to do all my work at night, and I'm going to take her somewhere fun, or, all those little things that you wish you could do. But and I that's why I do believe like you can make your life the way you want it. You just have to make these decisions and stick to them. But it's not easy. I mean, I'm always very honest with people, even comparing yourself to other people. Because, I was talking to my husband the other day. I said, I've had this business for 15 years. I've seen people come out of nowhere, and in 3 years, they're saying they're making millions of dollars. But a lot of times, when you peel back the onion on their stories, like they had a finance person that gave them an investment money, like, or they had a mentor who was wealthy and gave, said, here's some seed money and here's a roadmap for you. Here, go do it. So when I've learned over the years not to compare myself, because I have no idea what they came from or how they got started. I literally started with my money that I earned on my deployment in Iraq, and I like bought my first like website stuff. I had someone build it for me, and then I went from there. I bootstrapped everything, and I have not they now when you don't need the money, they're asking if you want a loan, but I still wasn't. I'm like, I don't want to do that. I'm like, when I needed a loan really badly, I never could get one. So I just believe in bootstrapping and even partnering with really good people. I've made bad decisions partnering with people on events or even just in general, but I feel like you learn to like see those warning signs and you learn to trust the right people over time. And that's the stuff that you just have to like slog through because it's just learning,
I think you
and I
learn
think.
more as you go. I know. That's been on my mind too lately. I just a realization of I've been doing this not 15 years, but easily 5. And same thing, like a lot of am I doing the right thing or learning from this person and that person? Nobody gave me the clear roadmap. Nobody gave me the blueprint. And I'm suddenly like, actually, now that I've been just doing it for so long, like you said, you just don't quit, you just keep going. I finally have the clarity, and it's like, huh, interesting. It's like,
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
and
that's how that was going.
well, and that's the funniest thing about this book too. It's like the beginning of the whole book is mindset stuff. It has no like tactics at all. Like in the very chunk, it's like here's a quiz about like are you having a mental block about money? Are you having a mental block about, like people supporting you or not supporting you? Do you have like what are the mindset blocks that you may have? And then how to figure out what yours are and then how to overcome those and like really think through them. And then we focus on the basics of like sales. Like really you want to get your offer nailed in, then you want to know how you're gonna like sales to me is more of a conversation to see if you're a fit with the person and not necessarily like a used car scenario. And then that's it. We just the three core things to make you money. And that's because I think that when you get it overcomplicated, like people right now, they're overwhelmed with AI tools. And we just, if you're already established, I would approach it differently. I would be looking at what you have going on online and do a strategy first. But with a startup or anybody that's wanting to start a business, I say do it even as just a side hustle. We just helped one of my husband's cousins. She's an amazing baker. And we're like, you need to sell these cookies and you need to be going to farmers markets. And, she is a worker. She just went out, got all the stuff, started baking. She didn't, she signed up for a thing that got canceled when and she started making phone calls. They let her sell outside of a Sam's Club.
Oh,
And she
wow,
was
that's
selling,
awesome.
yeah, like within, a week or two, she was selling stuff. So there's not a limit to what you can do. It's just focusing on only those three things and getting out of your own head. And that's why this book's not really a marketing book. It's kind of a mindset book and a like quick start, like just get started.
I like it. The revenue runway. So the three pillars then is mindset, offer, sales. Is that what you're, is, am I getting that out of the crowd? Okay. Because you also mentioned the three steps to a bulletproof business. Is that the same three steps, or are those two different things, like two different people we're talking to, sir?
No, the three that we finally agreed on is your offer, avatar, and your message. So those three, they're not anything new, but the way that I teach them is a little bit different. So it your client avatar, your ideal persona, all those words, we'd simplify it. So it's, you know what I mean? You just pick one person, then all your content, your messaging, all of those extra things just go to that one person, like you're talking to your friend. And that's where, like, in your social media content and all of that. So I just want people to get those three things nailed down. And there's ways we do it. So if they buy the book, they can come into our little team group and they're going to have a bunch of resources and templates that they can use to do this stuff. So I just don't want people to have anything that stops them from a forward momentum. So and I'll tell you not to build a website first, build a Facebook page first. So I kind of teach how to build a business almost backwards because I invested a lot of money in website and all this graphic design stuff, and I hadn't even really, I mean, the only thing I was doing at the time was website. And so, website building, designing, all that stuff. And I just, at the time, some logos here and there, but not really, mostly just websites. And I found that after like a, not even a year, maybe 6 months, it changed. Then they're like, I really want branding. So then I started doing more branding than websites. It was kind of like whatever the market was. And then we pivoted last year to strategy first only. So we only, so then, like, even for me, you're still constantly changing to adjust to what people actually need.
I mean,
So,
in a way, yes. And I think what we're both, I think we're on the same page here as far as like when we're first getting started in business, especially if we need money, right? We're in a position we're trying to replace income or capitalize on our transition. You do
yep.
have to follow whatever's in front of you. You kind of follow the money in that way. But what I've learned, and it sounds like you're learning, you're saying also, not learning, but you're saying also, is that at some point you start to be the leader of the ship rather than like the little boat behind the dinghy being pulled along because you start to see the clarity. You're like, you know what? I've been doing everything my clients are saying and I'm running ragged. And now I'm like, wait a second, you don't need that anyway. What you need is boom, let's slow down. But because you have the experience and the voice of authority. So whenever, but to all of you listeners, what I think the message here is to get started. And if in the beginning you're kind of not fully clear on everything and you are chasing the people around you, let that be, because you're gonna grow, you're gonna have that clarity, you're gonna ultimately come out like the beast. You know, at some point you're gonna be like, yes, I get it now. Let's steer the ship, and you will get that confidence, because it's really what it is.
And that's why I thought, like, no one's talking about this mindset stuff, and that's what blocks everyone. You know what I mean? Because most people can figure out how to build a quick website with Squarespace or Wix or whatever. It's
I mean,
not the
there's AI
skills.
websites even now, like
Yep,
Captivate, or
there's
no, it's, well, I can't remember the name of it. It was it'll come to me in a second,
I
but
so
you
I've been
literally
sent
type
two
it
or
in and
three
it just,
different ones.
yeah, it's amazing. Like the website is the most overstated, unnecessary thing, you
I
know,
think, yeah, until you
to
reach
get
a certain
started.
level. Yep. If you're going after something like a government contract, they want to see case studies and they want to look at you. But I think if it's some, like, small businesses just don't need to invest in any of that stuff until they actually know what they're selling is what somebody wants to buy. I
Yeah.
think that it's that, people, I mean, I've had people like, oh, I'm gonna market myself to help people with their, I don't know, for example, finances, financial planning, but like nobody really wants to buy that. They like, so there's ways also to test out your ideas and all that, which, in the group we'll talk about. But I just want this book to kind of motivate people to get excited about doing it. It's not necessarily anything new, right? It's not new, a new blueprint or blah, blah, blah. Because actually, if you look at everyone's blueprints and roadmaps and whatever, it's the same three things that you have to nail down.
Yeah.
Who are you selling to? What are you selling them? Do they even want it? And how do I position it so they realize that they need it? So I think, after doing like years and years of talking to your clients and then working with them, the thing that the client thinks they need is often not what they do need.
So true.
It's like a
Well,
symptom.
I want to ask you more about like the fractional CMO piece of what you do, because not only is I think that something interesting that could help people who are struggling, or you know, maybe are in a position where they have a job and they can afford your services to help them build their side hustle thing into something, but also for people who might be in a position where they do marketing for a company and think, well, maybe I could do that. Tell me more about what that is.
So, fractional CMO, the process that we do is we basically look at everything. Well, it depends on the client. So, what we would love to do with every one of our clients is to get under the hood of their business and then also look at what is externally facing online as well. So we'll go through, we'll look at competitors, we'll look at, who inside of the organization feels that they're doing marketing. Because, sometimes somebody has the title with marketing in it, but then they kind of give other people with different titles additional duties that involve marketing. So we try to pinpoint who's really doing the marketing. How are clients coming into the business? How are the clients experiencing the business? Do you have a referral program online and offline? What does your brand tell a potential client? Is your website built so that it will convert into a phone call? Because at that higher level, when someone's already established, it's more about optimizing what they have online and how it's performing and things like that. So, if you want to do fractional CMO, there's so many great resources out there. I got coached by different people, and then I ended up becoming certified because I've gone through different certification programs. The one that I have recently done is through Duct Tape Marketing, and it's really phenomenal. But they will help you like with all of the nuts and bolts of it. And then I took that framework and then I added my own stuff in there. So there's some of it is the way that they do it, and then some of it's the way that I do it. Some of the chunks I just changed a little bit, but we want to interview like people on the team. So ideally, five or six people that work for the company in marketing roles or marketing adjacent roles, any leadership. We like to get people high, mid, low, how they see the company, and then also any clients that the company's worked with. We want to interview them as well. And we record them and we get the transcriptions. And then at the end of all the research and the interviews, we pump out a report. So we give them recommendations on what we think that would improve their website. Or we say, hey, look, your website's great. You're checking all the boxes. You may want to tweak this page or add this here or whatever. But I mean, you're usually going to find at least one thing that could be improved upon because people are busy and they're just trying to get stuff out there. But I think for the most part, we want them to have, depending on what package they do, like a 3 to 12 month plan. Like, here's your content plan, here's your SEO. Like, but it's a holistic, it's every piece of the business as a whole that we give them recommendations on. That way, you're not going, oh, somebody's kid is on Discord. I think we now need to have a Discord channel because that's where the young people are. But they don't know what Discord is. They don't know what it does. They don't know why these kids are on there. And if you ask my daughter, they use all the same channels we do, but they don't use them the way we use them. So, like YouTube from a 14, 15-year-old is actually a social media chat. Like they chat in the video comments with each other and they have private groups on Discord and they toggle between the two because they have like private chat on Discord. So it's such a different world now because there's so many channels, but sometimes like those good ideas that people have are so anecdotal and the strategy saves you money because you're not having a person dedicate hours of time to build a channel out that is not even related to anything that you're doing.
Well, that can go in a lot of directions. It's so true. Like I had a client
Yeah.
who was complaining because her website, when she was on her tablet, the words, sometimes the words don't fit the way they do on a mobile, or they optimize websites for mobile and PC, but they don't seem to always think about the tablets or the small screens. Anyway,
Yep.
I said, well, before we rehaul, re-overdo everything, let's look at your analytics and see how many people are getting onto your site with a tablet. And it was literally four people. And I'm like, well, that was probably all you. Maybe we don't need to put a lot of time into
Yes. Yeah,
that.
because it's money, right? It's money spent on activity that's unnecessary. Like some problems, you're right, are not big enough to where you should allocate resources. It's just hard to explain that. But when you go through the process, what you see is people's light bulbs and the whole company go off. And they're like, oh, like we didn't even know that we only had 10% females on our stuff. Like we thought we had 50-50. Like you'd be surprised how much people don't know about what's going on in marketing, even when they are in the marketing department, because there's just so much day-to-day grind that they're dealing with, internal emails and when they get their head above water, it's like the day's over and they're like, I'll get to it tomorrow. And so I think it helps an outside person coming in, and then we don't have to execute any of it. We can, but we say, here's your plan. Like, have this delegated out to your team, and we can train them or whatever you need us to do. So I think that's the direction I've been going in, and I think I absolutely love the process. I love helping, and I like seeing them go, "Oh, we didn't know that," or "Oh, we didn't think that was even an issue." And just simple things like, "Hey, you should probably have a call to action on the very top of your website so people know how to call you if they want to hire you or something." And
I get it. No, I get it. It's true. And sometimes it's that they're so close to it, or, even, and this is true, and not to, I'm not, this is actually not to put anyone down. It's the complete opposite. Like, if you're in a marketing space, like a role in a company, you came in with your own ideas, you had your own, theories, and you've put them into action. But at some point, we are only the product of ourselves, right? It's like we have to get an outside person to look at us to see us differently. I see that all the time in the solopreneur space, where a lot of people will say, I can do marketing for other people, but I struggle with articulating it for myself. I've been one of those people who take it.
Oh, same. I know for me
Yep.
too. I mean, people crack up and they're like, "Well, it's the cobbler and his shoes issue. You're
Yeah.
looking at everybody else's
Yeah.
stuff." And I said, "It's true. It's my whole day is basically roadmaps for other people and checking in on the team to see if this web page is done or that messaging got added to the flyer. Like, it's just all the things." And, making sure that the clients feel like projects are moving forward. So I'm still a little team. It's me and a bunch of people that do, the graphic design pieces and all the, but I'm managing the project still. I actually really like it, but
Yeah,
at some
that's fine.
point I'll delegate that, but we'll see.
Right. Very cool. Well, thanks for shining a little light into what you're doing there, because I think that's something that a lot of people don't really understand, that fractional CMO. And it, that, by the way, for the audience listening, you could take what you're doing. So if you're in finance, you could be a fractional finance person, or that, you can be a fractional business officer, like, or operations type of person. You can really take your skill set and make it a service that you're offering to companies. Can I ask you one more question? I realize I don't even, no, we're doing good on time. For a second, I felt like it was a little longer than it'd been, but how did you go about getting some of your first, like, big clients? Like, maybe that's a fear for people. They're like, oh, I have no problem helping this person I know or that person I know. But to break into, like, a larger mid-level or larger corporation might feel a little scary.
I have always done well with like events or conferences. I feel like my situation was a little bit different because I was military and it was a little bit trendy to do entrepreneurship programs for military veterans for a season. So there was a lot of those conferences where I went and I got to meet people at the corporate level who were like, "Oh, you do marketing? Like, we're doing this military outreach thing or we're doing whatever." And then I had friends that knew, like, I think the first project that I did for a big company was Amgen Pharmaceuticals. They were doing an event and they have a supplier diversity. And she said, "Hey, small businesses, like, we're always looking for people that are like solopreneurs or maybe have, a staff of, less than five people." And especially like minority groups, so like females or whatever, like, they'll look for those kind of companies. You can sign up on their websites. You can become part of their supplier diversity programs. And then they do have like RFPs. I did a contract probably my first 2, 3 years in business with the city of Garden Grove in California. We did a website for a museum, for Vietnam Veteran Museum. And because I was positioned as a military marketing agency and they didn't know anyone else who did that niche, like, they did a sole source contract for it. So I think what I've learned over time is, don't be intimidated by the size of a company, because the people that work inside that company are just the people. Like, if you went and got a corporate job somewhere, which you could totally do, it's the same thing. They all still have problems. They're just different. Like, the bigger the company, the more siloed everyone is. And so getting them to communicate in also do their regular day job, it's a lot to pull them away from their duties. I remember one of my first jobs in corporate, I was working for Petco Animal Supplies in San Diego at the corporate office. And my first job there was, right out of college, was internal communications coordinator. So every month we pulled every department, there were like 16 departments, and we forced them to sit in a room together and say, "What are you communicating out to the stores? What are you communicating out to the employees? what needs to get snail mailed, what can be an email, what could be a meeting. Like, and we, my job was to triage the communications and go, okay, like this. And they would say, Kaylin, read it as if you have no idea what a planogram is. And I said, to be honest with you, I don't have any idea what a planogram is. And so I'm reading it. And they're like, okay, because the people that, make $15, $20 an hour in the stores setting this stuff up, they don't know what it is either. So they're going and reading. And so we would change the language so that it would be step by step, Barney style, so that people could go, okay, step one. And then they would, and I said, well, is that piece labeled so that, like, when you are putting it together, and they're like, oh, that's, and it's because they're so close to it. They're designing the floor show space. And so they don't think about the person that has to put together their vision for it. And inside the corporate office, we had like a fake Petco store. And so they would design the floor, like, and all the end caps, like the way they wanted them to look, and then take pictures. And those pictures would be in this big instruction manual, be like 100 pages of instructions on how to set it up.
Oh my
But
gosh. You're
yeah, they were
talking to someone who my
huge.
first job was in a PetSmart. I was
Okay, there you go.
an hour employee. Actually, back then it was probably more like 10 or 12. But
But
yeah, no, I
yeah, you know
understand.
the drill. And
Yep.
then, the live animal, all these updates, live animal alerts and whatever. So I, you know, we, that's why when I'm working with clients now, it's funny because they don't think like how the channel and the way that you're sending out a message, it makes a difference on the person receiving it. And
Yeah.
so if you have the basics nailed down through the strategy process, then all of that other stuff kind of fills itself in and
I
you can make
really
them.
liked that part of your process. It, honestly, it was one of the first times I think I've ever heard that. And I don't know if that just means I haven't talked to a lot of CMOs, but how you go in and interview the team was actually really cool. And because you didn't sound like you limit it to just even people in the marketing department. You're kind of like really getting the essence of the company and what do people think it stands for,
Yeah.
and learning, I guess, from the inside out, which honestly more owners and founders and CEOs need to have somebody like that, just do that piece of it. Forget the marketing part of it. Like, bring the people together to hear what people are saying within their own company, because they're all making an assumption that everybody's marching in the same direction, and most of the time that's not true. So.
Yeah, I'm no, this company, we're working with a company right now that's huge. They have like they're regional, and I am it's they the people that work there love working there. Like, it's one of those companies where everyone's like, we love what we do, we can see how we impact our clients, and it's like what we love. And but they all have different points of view when it comes to marketing, but you see where there's a commonality between everyone's responses, and then you see where they all kind of differ and kind of go off. So when you have that overlap, and even the clients, like hearing from the client, what do you think they could do better? It seems like a scary exercise, but it actually is a confidence booster because you know who the people are that you worked with. And the majority of the clients that we interview, they're saying great things. They're saying like, I really enjoyed working with them. I really think that in this area they're particularly strong because I worked with this person or that person. And when you give the feedback to the client that, hey, all these people have been saying such incredible things about you guys, you're being really hard on yourselves. You're thinking you're all a mess. And, yes, there's things we can improve, but like overall, the feeling your clients are getting is great. Like, it doesn't have to be a negative process. Like, it's like a temperature check on your and also saving you money because, there may be conferences people are getting paid to go to that you don't need to do anymore, or that meeting could be an email instead, or how are we communicating with people? Is it working? So all of those little things, they reveal a lot.
Yeah.
And there's a way to do it on a mini scale for small businesses too, but
That's awesome. This has been a really interesting conversation. We touched on so much, like from being a startup, a solopreneur, all the way to working with corporations and government contracts. Like, what a scope of conversation. That's awesome. You're a really dynamic human being. And I just want to say thank you so much for contributing to the show and just being a light in the world to help people. I think your book is fantastic. So everybody go check it out. Where can they go get your book, The Revenue Runway?
TheRevenueRunway.com is our official domain. We're still building. It's going to be on presale, I think November 4th on Amazon. I'm pretty sure, but I can send you a follow-up on that.
Well, by the time this airs, it will be for sale. So everybody check
Yep.
it out at therevenuerunway.com. I've got a
Perfect.
couple weeks of episodes to produce, so we're good on that. That's exciting. They'll be some of your first purchasers.
That'll be so great. Yeah. And anything you need, let me know. I'm always around.
Oh, and do you want to also tell people where they can connect with you, like if they want to work with you as a CMO?
The CMO website is kmc.digital. So it's www.kmc.digital. That's it. And they can find a contact form, and my calendar is right there.
Awesome. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in.